You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Cats were one for one from this area in Calgary and almost picked. Luke Tasker's going to score a touchdown. Cats strike first. So far, Masoli, look at this move, chucks it now, and Brandon Banks dances into the end zone. How about that? Look at Timmis running wild again. Mercer Timmis, look out, Hope Free, touchdown. What a night for the former Dino.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, it was a pretty good week to be a Ticats fan this past weekend, no?
Was it ever? What a performance. I mean, that's the kind of football you want to watch. Am I right or am I right?
You are 100% right. But as good as it was for Ticats fans around the globe, things didn't get off to a great start for you and I, though. I want to share a text message you sent me on Thursday night just prior to Saskatchewan and Ottawa facing off in the first game of week two. It was a text that gave me a good laugh, as most of your texts do, because, Mike, you're a pretty funny guy. So at 7.04 p.m. on Thursday, I get a text from Mike that reads, Kate and Burris sitting side by side on the panel. Both our nightmares are happening in real life. My response to you was, this is why I stopped watching pregame shows. We shared a hearty laugh. But man, oh man, yeah, that was a kick in the clackers, that one, seeing those two, our mortal enemies, side by side, teaming up in our faces prior to the game.
I know. You with Burris and me with Kate, it's not great, is it? The panel on Thursdays, it's just not great. I mean, it's good that they're freshening it up, and I've said this before, but, I don't know if I can watch any Thursday night panels anymore. I'll watch the games, obviously, because I love me some CFL football, but I don't love me some Kate and Burris.
The only good thing about Kate being on there is it means Rod Smith will be in the booth. And I really enjoy him as a play-by-play man. So that's, I guess – but then again, you don't have to watch the panel in order to enjoy Rod. So you can get the best of both worlds. No Kate, all Rod. It works for me. Another thing this past week, my friend, that gave me a chuckle. You're going to have to explain yourself here because I don't know what the hell this was. But you had an interview, and I'm putting this in air quotes, with Global Edmonton that you posted on your Twitter feed. It was absolutely hilarious, but you got to give me the story on this. You got to tell everyone what's going on, because I know you're a funny guy. I just told everyone that I think you're a funny guy. This was fantastic. How did this come about? What is this deal?
Well, my buddy Mick Ozzy is his name.
Is that his real name?
I don't know. I just know him by Mick. I call him Mick. So, you know, me and Mick always meet up at the games, always in the end zones, and he always wants to do videos, And sometimes I've had a few too many wobbly pops, you know, to actually do a video. But this time I was fairly sober, and, you know, he said they were doing little short videos for Global News. You send it into Global News, and I don't know what the deal is. They might show it on TV or something, but he said, you want to do a video? And I said, sure. And he's like, I got this global styrofoam mic with me. And I was like, all right, well, smack me in the face a bit, like when we start, you know, get some laughs going. But I thought it went really well. We kept it short and to the point. And I'm glad you found it humorous, Josh.
I did. I thought it was great. Is the accent real or is that a put on?
Oh no, the accent's fully real. Fully real.
Wow. I don't. Yeah, I'm.
He's never not had the accent.
He's never broke character in front of you.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's kayfabing you all the way.
Yes, absolutely.
No, that was some good stuff. And speaking of good stuff, man, the game itself this past week was good stuff for us. Our Hamilton Tiger Cats go into Commonwealth and lay a smackdown on the Edmonton Eskimos, 38-21. Ticats scored on their opening drive. Edmonton matches it on their opening drive, but the Ticats bounce right back, score again on their next drive, and that was it. They never trailed or tied the rest of the way. Mike, this was as thorough a win as this team has put together in a meaningful game in some time. I know that there was that 33-0 shellacking of the Alouettes, I think the final week of the season last year, but that was two teams out of the playoffs, didn't matter much. This was a meaningful game. Week two, Ticats coming off a loss, hoping to get that that first victory to kind of get that monkey off their back so that people aren't going, oh, another 0-2 start, typical Ticats. That doesn't happen. They destroy Edmonton. You were in the crowd for that one. How much fun was it to be live watching the Ticats absolutely smoke Edmonton?
It was fantastic compared to last year. I know that they were in the game last year in Edmonton. But, you know, they start off touchdown. They just keep – it seemed like they kept it going the whole game. I know there was a little bit of butters in a couple of series, but nothing to get up in arms about. They're not going to score every single drive. I'd like them to, but that's not going to happen. The offense consistency was absolutely phenomenal. And we were talking before we were recording, you know, about Mazzoli, that the knock on him was he wasn't exactly the most consistent quarterback week in, week out. But I think at this point he is. It's been going back to last season. It's been 11 or 12 weeks where he's been put in a solid performance every single week. So it was a ton of fun to be there. And I wish I could watch Ticats games live like this every week. He would be phenomenal.
Well, I'm hoping for a repeat performance this Friday when I will be live in stands at Tim Hortons Field watching him take on the Blue Bombers. But that's a discussion topic for a little bit later in the show. Let's stick with this game. Complete domination, Mike. That's kind of the words of the week. 17-point margin of victory tells a great story. Pretty much tells you all you need to know. But there are some other numbers in this that I think will also just show how dominant a win this was for the Ticats. 32 first downs for Hamilton to 18 for Edmonton, 519 yards of offense to just 340 for Edmonton, 65% success rate on second down to Edmonton's 58%. They won the turnover battle, and they went 3-for-3 in the red zone, making them 4-for-4 on the year. I think that is a highly under-talked about, that's not really a word, but we're going to go with it, fact here, because one of the knocks on this team was its inability to score in the red zone. And now we've seen them – now four red zone trips does not a season make, but, man, to be 100% on red zone efficiency to start the season, that bodes well. But these numbers just knock you on the floor, man. This was just you mentioned we talked before the show. This is another point we talked about. This was never in doubt. Like, you run down these numbers, you go back and watch this game. There was the one time when they were tied, and that was it. This was a thorough, complete performance by the Ticats. And domination was the name of the game in this one, don't you think?
Absolutely. And you talk about the score. I mean, it was kind of close for a bit, like score wise, but the play on the field was not even close. You're right. There was no question in this one. It's you mentioned the total yards gained by the Ticats. Jeremiah was only 332 yards, but I want to mention the rushing yards. I mean, between Mercer Timmis, Jeremiah Mazzoli and Nikita Whitlock, they almost had 200 yards rushing. Now, Nikita Whitlock only had 4 yards, so you can kind of take him out of the equation. But all together, almost 200 yards rushing. That is great stuff.
Fantastic stuff. You know what else is fantastic? Seeing a couple fan favorites get back on the field. Delvin Bro and Terrence Tolliver made their return to the lineup. Bro from a stint in the NFL, Tolliver from an injury. Let's talk about Bro first, because you didn't hear a lot from him in the game. Just had one tackle. It came when he read and stopped a screen pass to CJ Gable, but he was his old shutdown self, because Mike Riley pretty much never threw his way. It was going to be a matchup between Bro and Darrell Walker in this. Darrell Walker's numbers were not spectacular. They weren't, like, they're fine numbers, but they're not the numbers you expect out of Darrell Walker. He had 6 catches for 56 yards, and he did have a score, but coming off a week where he had, what, 170-something against, or 180-something against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, those are not numbers you normally see from Walker. And it came not against Bro. They moved Walker around for him to get those yards. For a guy who's dealt with injuries the last couple of years in the NFL, to come back after just a couple of days of practice and to essentially reassert himself as one of the league's best shutdown boundary corners, what a first performance from Bro back in Hamilton.
Yeah, you're not going to see the huge stats from Bro, right? You're not going to have, you know, 10 interceptions and a ton of tackles and all that, because the quarterbacks aren't throwing to who he's covering. Like, that was the way in the past in 2004, 14 and 15. And it seems to be the same way right now in the present. You know, it's only been one game, but, you know, coming off those injuries, it was serious injuries to come into this game in his first game back and be that shutdown guy again it's really encouraging.
Terrence Tolliver's performance, I thought, was really encouraging. 4 catches for 78 yards, a long of 28, 2 second down conversions. But it's what he brings to this receiving unit. It's the height. And there were a couple. He almost made a really nice one down the middle of the field that would have set up the Ticats in the red zone. It was, I think, I don't know if it was knocked out or if he dropped it. It was kind of hard to tell while watching the game. But he just adds that extra dimension that this receiving unit was missing. For his first game back in a year, that is about as good a performance as you could have hoped for. 78 yards, 4 catches. On a receiving core that's this loaded where they can find multiple guys to catch the ball, that's pretty good for Terrence Tolliver.
Yeah, and I remember his first catch of the game, I believe it was, where he jumped up there and used his height to grab the ball. And I said to myself, well, Tolliver's back. And, I mean, he had a really good – he had a better game than Walker did on the other side. So, you know, the Ticats stacked up the numbers receiving-wise, and Tolliver was number 3 behind Banks and Tasker, who both had over 100 yards. So – a great first performance by Tolliver as well.
And now you look with these two additions, there's not a ton of holes in this Ticats lineup. They went out. Tolliver obviously wasn't a guy that went out and got. He's a guy that got healthy, but they go and get Bro. This team is just, it's starting to resemble that team that we saw at the tail end of last year where when it's all clicking, when they're playing their game, they can't be stopped. And I think these two additions just make them that much more dangerous.
Absolutely. This receiving core is phenomenal. There's so many weapons that we have. They're going to rack up some big numbers, Josh. Numbers.
It's an embarrassment of riches almost. There's one other thing I want to talk about because I was able to go back. I wasn't able to go back and watch the Calgary game. I was able to go back and watch this one. And it's June Jones's offensive scheme. We're seeing some things from this team that maybe are causing opposing defenses to not really know what to do. We see 6 offensive linemen a lot. Landon Rice comes in as a tight end. We see that a ton. We see Nikita Whitlock in there, and he's not listed as a fullback, but he's essentially in there as another blocker. And it's something where, oh, why didn't we think of this? That's why they were moving Nikita Whitlock back there. It wasn't just to run the football. It was to be another big body to help pick up the blitz. And there was a time in this game when he did pick up the blitz, allowed Mazzoli to make a throw. I think that this is – we're seeing this stuff that we didn't see under Ken Austin. I know that you mentioned this in the past – that you had been told through some anonymous sources that Ken Austin don't like to do max protect at all. And now we're seeing 6 offensive linemen. We're seeing a 250-pound, quote-unquote, running back. And you're watching how efficiently that Mazzoli is able to operate in and out of the pocket. He's not rushed a ton. He is sometimes, but then he makes plays when he does it. You're seeing a wrinkle that I think most teams haven't seen before, and it seems to be causing problems for opposing teams.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I mean, protect that guy. Protect your most important player, for God's sakes. I mean, yes, there's less receivers out there, less options to throw to, but if you have time in the pot, we've seen Mazzoli, if he has time, he will make that right decision. He will find the open man, even if there's 3 or 4 receivers opposed to 5. I just love the max protect stuff. I love that June Jones is making those adjustments to protect Mazzoli, and it's paying out for this team and for June Jones.
All right, Mike, let's get into the new format here. Let's talk about what we liked, what we didn't like for this game. And you talked about Jeremiah Mazzoli, so let's kick things off with him, Mike. Tell us what you loved about Jeremiah Mazzoli.
Everything. The guy was amazing. I mean, 19 to 25, 65% passing, 332 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception, but he ran the ball too. 7 carries for 59 yards, an 8.4 yard average, a long of 20. When you have a quarterback back there who is a danger to run, it gives fit to the defense, gives fits to the defensive coordinator, and this is what Mazzoli brings. He's an efficient passer, and he can use his legs to really tear up defenses. So Mazzoli is a big up for me, big up.
Are we done slandering this man? Are we done asking when Johnny Manziel is going to take his job? 300 yards passing for the second straight week to start the season. He's thrown for 3 Bills in 7 straight games dating back to last year. The league record is 9. Look, at some point he's not going to throw for 300 yards. We know that. He's not going to throw 300 plus every week. Maybe he will. I don't think he will. I think the everything sort of regresses at some point. There's a possibility he could break the record for most consecutive 300-yard games, and people still doubt this guy. I don't know what it is. The only thing I can go back to is early in his career when he got a chance to play early in his career with Hamilton, he didn't play very well. He was throwing off his back foot a lot. He still does that, but he's making it work now. He wasn't as confident a player. I remember when Caleros got hurt, I think it was 2013, and he came in there, and he didn't play very well. Then Dan LeFevre came in and kind of, set the world on fire for a few weeks there. I don't know. I just feel like people are still trying to judge Jeremiah Mazzoli based on what they saw 5 years ago, when the evidence in front of them over the past 12 games that he's played since Labor Day last year tells you that he's a completely different player. What we saw in Edmonton is not some aberration where it's like, wow, he threw for 65%, he threw for over 300 yards, he threw 3 touchdowns. This is who he is. And the sooner that fans who are clamoring for Manziel to play or who just don't like Jeremiah Mazzoli accept this, I think they'll be a lot happier. I think this is one of these performances. Like, it was so magnificent, but it's become the norm that I'm not – like, yes, I'm impressed, you know what I mean? But I'm not like – oh my God, I can't believe he did this. I expected this performance from him. And if something like this, what he's done over the last 7 games with 300-yard performances, what he's done to start this season, if that doesn't shut his critics up, man, nothing will. Because what more does he have to do outside of winning MOP and winning a championship? Can Jeremiah Mazzoli do that will get everyone off his goddamn back?
I hope so. I mean, I was a doubter too back in the day. I had my doubts about Jeremiah Mazzoli. But the proof is right in front of you. I'm the last 10, 11 games, he has been outstanding for the most part, like 90% of the time, 95% of the time. He's just been a really good starting quarterback. The guy can pass it. The guy can run it. He makes smart decisions now. Most of the time, we'll forget about that interception last week. But for the most part, I mean, this guy's making the right decisions. He's a good passer. He's a good – yeah, I don't get it either. He's gonna give us a lot of wins, be a part of a lot of wins this season. And if fans don't embrace him at that point, I don't know what to tell them.
Okay, so my first hip hip hooray from this one, Mercer Timmis. We know how much I love my Canadian receivers, Mike. We've talked about that ad nauseum now since we started the podcast. But I also really do dig Canadian running backs, and I dig local products. I was a big Dave Stahl fan. We're both big Rob Hitchcock fans, hashtag Hitch for Hall. We are both – I like Mike Morreale. I'm sure you did too because of the glory years. I like local products. Mercer Timmis, a Burlington boy, gets kind of his first opportunity to really be kind of a bell cow back. He didn't start the game, but he did end up the game as the leading rusher. And boy, what a performance. 17 carries, 133 yards, 2 touchdowns. Mike, one of your favorite stats, yards per carry, 7.8. He had runs of 11, 13, 14, 15, 12, and 44 yards in this. He ran the ball 3 times in the final 2 minutes to seal the game. He was running past people. The 44-yard touchdown run, he was untouched. That's great job by the offensive line, but that's also great vision from Timmis. Found the hole, hit the edge, took it upfield, gone. But he's running over dudes. He's running around dudes. He's stiff-arming dudes. This was a star-making performance, a breakout performance for Mercer Timmis.
Yeah, you gotta love Mercer Timmis. I mean, he's really developing into a hell of a player, and that yards per average, I mean, yes, his numbers were inflated by that long run to the end of the game, but I mean, if you were running the ball on first down every time and he's getting 7.2 yards, we're getting a lot of first downs, because that's second and short, and that's what offenses love. I mean, 5+ yards on first down is key. So, yeah, I mean, if Mercer Timmis can keep doing his thing, maybe we'll see him for a bit longer as a starter. Probably not. Alex Green will probably come back. And we have John White. But, man, Mercer Timmis is a great option.
Well, it's not only like, yeah, those guys are going to come back. They're going to get their playing time. But what this shows me is that there's not going to be a significant drop-off if a ratio change has to be made or if Timmis comes in for a short spell. Like, we're still going to see the same high quality of play regardless of who's in the backfield. And I know you mentioned the 44-yard run. kind of helped the numbers and helps the average and all that, and I get that. But that came late in the game when Edmonton knew Hamilton was going to run. And the offensive line bullied that defensive front, which is – I know they've lost a lot of players in Edmonton, but that's still a very impressive defensive front. When you can rush for 133 yards on a defensive line that is anchored by Armando Sewell, you've done a really good job. And, yeah, but the 44 yards, it came late. It helps the numbers and all that. But it came at a time when the defense knew they were going to run, and they still couldn't stop it. Just a super impressive performance from him. And I just look – again, it just adds to the embarrassment of riches that this team has on the offensive side of the ball. We know what Alex Green can do. We've seen what John White can do. Now we have Mercer Thimmis. Man, a three-headed monster like that, obviously they're not all going to play at the same time. I understand that. But, man, what a good sort of problem to have when you have three tailbacks who could really carry the rock and be the bell cow any week.
And you think about the offensive line opening holes for Mercer Thimmis, and like no offense to Mercer Thimmis, he's a really good running back, but he doesn't have the speed per se of a John White or someone like that. So I'm just imagining what the offensive line can do opening holes for the real streakers, for the real fast dudes that we have in the running back position. It could get pretty fun to watch. I mean, if they open up holes like they did for Mercer Thimmis, we're going to be gaining 100 yards rushing the ball a lot of games.
Sure. What was your second thing that you loved about this game, Mike?
Time of possession for Hamilton. They were 35-46, and the Eskimos were 24-14. So that's – we had the ball over 11 minutes more than what Edmonton had. And that tells you that Hamilton, you know, they can make that big play down the field. They can score quickly, or they can take their time and kill the clock. So that right there, the possession of time of possession is huge to me.
The best way to stop a good offense is to not let them on the damn field. Mm-hmm. And I think the defense did a really good job. They gave up a couple big plays that I'm sure we're going to talk about in a bit. But for the most part, I feel like they kept Edmonton's offense in check. That gets them off the field quicker. And then Hamilton's offense itself was just efficient. And the time of possession numbers, I didn't mention it early because I knew you wanted to cover it here, but just another massive number in Hamilton's favor that just shows why they won this game.
Yeah. And do you know, like, I think one of the reasons why Hamilton's offense is so effective is there's so many option routes. The receivers have so many options. Like, they decide. They look at the zones or they look at the coverage, and they will go where they feel is best to go. They will sit in the hole. So there's a lot of deciding by the receivers on which routes they're going to run. As like, that's what I found out about the run and shoot. I don't know if it's the same as it used to be, but there was a lot of option routes in the run and shoot back in the day.
And you need smart receivers to run those routes. You need them to be in sync with their quarterbacks. And I want to talk about my last hip, hip, hooray from this. I want to talk about two receivers because it feels unfair to kind of uncouple them. I want to talk about Brandon Banks and Luke Tasker. Their performance shows how varied this offense could be. Last week, we had Jalen Saunders and Mike Jones lead the way in the receiving category. This week, it was Brandon Banks and Luke Tasker. Banks led the team in yards and catches. He had 6 for 117 yards. Tasker wasn't far behind, 5 grabs for 103 yards. Both found the end zone. Banks hauling in that 18-yard touchdown pass from Jeremiah Mazzoli and then dancing into the end zone, doing a little bit of river dance, which seemed to piss off quite a few Edmonton fans on Twitter, but I thought it was fantastic. And Luke Tasker caught a pair of touchdowns, the first coming on what was a perfect, and I cannot stress this enough, it was a perfect pass from Jeremiah Mazzoli. Just missed the defender's outstretched hands right where only Tasker could catch it. Turns it upfield, hits pay dirt 15 yards later. The second was on a crossing route, and this is kind of why I wanted to put these two guys together. Mazzoli hits Tasker in the middle of the field, and he turns it upfield, and on the play, Brandon Banks has a chance to de-cleat. I don't know which Edmonton defensive back it was, but he has a chance to pull one of those crackback blocks and one of the, or peelback blocks, whatever you want to call it, that have been outlawed this year. He doesn't do it. Instead, he sees Tasker, turns himself upfield, blocks another player that helps Tasker get into the end zone. So instead of, you know, laying out the big hit, which I'm sure a guy who's 5'7 and 170 pounds would love to do, didn't do it, because if he does that, flag comes out, negates whatever Tasker does next. Instead, he makes the smart play, heads up field, really great play by Speedy B, really great route running and yards after catch by Tasker. And just, again, these two being leading the way this week, Jones and Saunders leading the way the week before, Terrence Tolliver back. Who knows who's going to lead the way in next week's game against Winnipeg? This just shows me how good this offense could be.
Yeah, they could take turns each week, you know. That's how talented the receiving core is. And I just want to talk about Tasker. He knows how to get that first down. Like, if he's short a couple yards, he just figures out a way to put his head down or make a guy miss. He's not the fastest guy in the world. He's just a very, very intelligent football player, and I can't get enough of watching him. And Brandon Banks, you know, he's just awesome. He's just – the speed kills. He makes these awesome catches. Both these guys had phenomenal games, but I can't stop gushing about Tasker especially.
Do you like Tasker? I know he's, like, probably your favorite player on the team. I think we've talked enough about him that – I get the sense that he's the guy that you really like. Is it because you see a little bit of Darren Flutie in him?
It is. It is partially the height, the not – overly fast. He's just the way he catches the ball. They're both very intelligent players, or Darren Flutie was. I do see a little bit of Darren Flutie and Luke Tasker, and you know, maybe I could see him being better than Darren Flutie at the end of his Ooh. Career. You know, let's not get ahead of ourselves, but I think that's a possibility.
All right, Mike. I know it's really hard to find things to be negative about after a 17-point win, but this wasn't a perfect performance by our Tiger Cats. So there are some things that I think they need to clean up. I think you have some things you want them to clean up. Mike, what was your number one thing you didn't like about this game?
The deep balls that were, you know, the passes from Riley, they were just wide, way behind the secondary, the Tiger Cats secondary. I was a little concerned about that. That kind of dried up near the end of the second half. I don't know. I think you saw on the replay. I didn't see the replay, so I don't know what exactly happened on that first long bomb touchdown pass, but he was way behind the secondary. So I don't know. Maybe you could give a little bit of, you know, you were at home watching on TV, so maybe you have a better perspective than I would that was at the game.
Yeah, it was clearly a miscommunication between the field corner, Jamal Roll, and the field halfback, Richard Leonard. They both went for the underneath route, leaving Duke Williams wide open for the 88-yard bomb. It's not something I think you'll – I think with – because Roll played boundary corner and was bumped out to field corner for this game because of the return of Delvin Bro. Roll's a first-year player. Leonard himself is still only a second-year player. I feel like – with time, those types of mental errors and breakdowns, we won't see. I'd rather
he's not a man-to-man guy, Richard Leonard, because he was awesome last year. And then
I think he is. I think it was just one of those things where I think both guys thought they were taking the one guy, and I think they both thought we're both like coming out of the play like, okay, it's man-to-man, and they both thought they were taking the same guy, and they didn't communicate, and then that just allows for a breakdown. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah, I get you now.
Yeah, but I don't think it was like a
zone. He wasn't great in the first game either, but hopefully he gets better.
He kind of has had a bit of a slow start. He did have the interception late in this game that was off, like, you know, a tip pass and all that stuff, and do feel like his defending got better as the game goes on. And again, last year I think they played a lot more zone, so maybe he's just coming around to that. But I have to agree with you on the deep ball stuff. It was probably one of the few things in this game that I was just like, oh, man, like, what would this game have been if they weren't able to connect on those deep passes? Like, one gets a touchdown. I think it was a 50-something-yard bomb to Kenny Stafford, set up a touchdown. And then there was, like, a 30-40-yard pass to Stafford that got a PI call in the end zone that set up their only other touchdown. So without these deep balls, Edmonton doesn't get on the board.
No, they were going deep all game long. They must have saw something, and they figured that they could take advantage of the Ticats, and which they did on a couple of plays, but overall I feel like their strategy failed a bit.
Yeah, like as the game went on, I feel like those big shots were less and less effective, and I think that was sort of hammered home with the tipped interception, where at that point I think there was two Edmonton receivers and three Ticats defenders. And then we saw Mike Daly on a deep ball make a great diving knockdown. Like, it was one of those things where I feel like in the second half you sort of saw the adjustments made, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So speaking of tip balls, my first boo of the game, Mike Jones, man, a week after he was hot and all the hoes were all on him, Mike Jones reverted back to the Mike Jones we all kind of remember from last year. He was only targeted once in this game, and it led to the only Ticats turnover of the night. I'll give him a little bit of slack because the pass was a bit high, but it looked on replay, watching at home, that Jones may have mistimed his jump, and that tip ball just fell right into Blair Smith's waiting hands. Not a big deal in the grand scheme of things, but it would be really nice if Jones could kind of become a more consistent contributor, or at least not lead to turnovers. Like, again, we're nitpicking to find things not to like in this game, but this one, because it led to a turnover, because he had such a great week the week before, kind of disappointing.
Yeah, it is a bit disappointing. You know, there's so much potential there. And if he could just get it together and, you know, perform consistently, then I think we could have a hell of a Canadian talent on our hands, a hell of a talent. I mean, this guy has really good speed. If he could just work on his catching the ball and some of his decision making, then we could have a really good player. But it seems that he's... Maybe it's in his head. You know, he's got the yips like in baseball or something. And I thought that maybe in the first game that would have got it out of his head. And, you know, it was just one mistake. But it's too bad that it happened to him.
All right, pal. What is your second thing you didn't like about this game?
Well, it's not that I didn't like it per se, but I thought the D-line was a little bit underwhelming. I think they had one sack on the night. Not a ton of pressure, I feel like. If there was more pressure, Mike wouldn't be able to go down the field so much. So I think that D-line has to improve a little bit.
Yeah, again, like I said, we're really kind of nitpicking at these things. My second one, Mike, is undisciplined penalties. The Ticats took some really dumb penalties in this game. Kariel Brooks was flagged for objectionable conduct because he kicked the ball after Kenny Stafford made a big catch.
Yeah, the guy's spinning it, man. He's spinning it. I hate that.
Yeah, I know you hate it. I'm not a big fan of it either.
I know. You're Devin not Elliott supposed to do it. I know.
But don't kick the ball. You know you're going to get flagged for it. Brandon Banks got a roughing penalty for doing something on the sideline. I don't know what it was because TSN didn't show it. So I just know he got flagged. I think Kwaku Boateng got an objectionable conduct penalty on the same play. So I don't know what happened. I just know he got flagged. This was when the Cats were up big. Banks needs to be smarter than that. We just praised him for his smarts on pulling a block, and then he does a bonehead thing like this. And then after a dubious, I believe, pass interference call on Richard Leonard, Adrian Tracy was hit with an objectionable conduct flag for, I believe, jawing at the ref. He then came off the field right afterwards, so obviously the coaches weren't too happy with it. Because we won, these types of things will be forgotten, but this team needs to be more disciplined. Jerry Glanville wants to play an aggressive defense, wants those defenders to be aggressive. But to me, and I'm sure you agree with me, there's a difference between being aggressive and being selfish and stupid. And these penalties to me were selfish and stupid. And in a closer game, these could have really hurt the Ticats.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. If this game was a touchdown or even 10 points, if they were just ahead by 10 points, you never know what could happen. But Jerry Glanville has been synonymous with his defenses have been synonymous with playing close to the edge or at times going over that edge. So I'm not shocked that we're seeing these penalties, but I'm sure he's not preaching, hey guys, let's take stupid penalties. But I am pretty sure he's preaching, let's play close to that edge. And sometimes when you get those emotions up, you jump over the edge. So I don't like those penalties, obviously. But you might see a bit more of it going on in the season. And, it might be a detriment to the team. But I hope that it doesn't go that way.
All right, Mike, let's close out this week's game review by awarding our second Podski Player of the Week. We ran a fan poll on our at PodskiWeWe Twitter account. You can follow us there after the game, giving the fans four options to pick a Player of the Week. We had Jeremiah Mazzoli, Mercer Timmis, Luke Tasker, and other. Jeremiah Mazzoli was the runaway winner, garnering 65% of the vote. Mercer Timmis finished second with 26%. Luke Tasker finished third with 6%. And other was 3% of the vote. I asked when, behind the curtains, I was the one who put the poll up. I think we should do this each and every week. Mike, when you are running our account, please don't forget to do this. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yes.
I asked in the other section, reply with who it was. I got one reply, and it was for Johnny Manziel, and I know it was a joke. So don't get up in arms. Don't go looking at the tweet and start, you know, aggressively trolling the guy that said Johnny Manziel. It was meant as a joke. We all had a good laugh out of it. Not a big deal. The fans voted for Jeremiah Mazzoli, and our choice this week is going to line up with the fans. We are also taking Jeremiah Mazzoli as our Week 2 Podski Player of the Week. Mike, you ran down the numbers earlier. You mind running them down again for anyone who may have missed it?
Oh, not at all. 19 of 29, 65.5% passing, 332 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception, and he ran the ball for 59 yards on 7 carries, so an 8.4 yard average and a long of 20. This guy gets it done through the air and on the ground. It's just we had a little discussion about Mercer Timmis, and he was damn close to getting the award, but we got to give it to Mazzoli. He just is the man.
Mazzoli nearly put up 400 yards of offense on his own. That is right. If that doesn't garner a guy player of the week, nothing will. So Jeremiah Mazzoli, very deserving of our Week 2 Podski Player of the Week. Mike, let's move on to the Ticats news. Not a ton to cover this week. They did make a few roster moves. They signed Tanner Dahl, long snapper formerly of the Ottawa Redblacks, played in Ottawa from 2016 and 2017, was a fourth-round pick of the Redblacks in 2015, and was a member of their Grey Cup-winning team in 2016. God, it hurts to say that so much because I hate Ottawa so much. but he played in this last game against the Eskimos. He was replacing Kevin Malcolm, who the team released. I'm wondering if maybe the change was made due to the blocked punt. I'm not sure how you blame that on the long snapper, but here we are anyway with a new long snapper. And that leads into the players that the team released. They got rid of international defensive back Jaleel Wadood, international defensive lineman Lyndon Trail, Kevin Malcolm, who was a long snapper that I mentioned earlier, international wide receiver Bryce Wilkerson, who was let go for Terrence Tolliver to come back on the roster. And last but definitely not least, they finally did something with Vernon Adams, and they released him as well. Man, thinking about the Vernon Adams release, the Ticats made a couple of trades this offseason, Mike, that we discussed at length in earlier episodes of the show. And they, right now, looking at it, kind of have nothing to show for it. They deal for Charleston Hughes, and I remember when that happened, you and I were like, holy crap, Charleston Hughes, we got all happy. And then, what was it, maybe 2 hours later, you texted me, Vernon Adams, and I'm like, oh, they traded for Vernon Adams too? And then I find out they traded Charleston Hughes for Vernon Adams, and now they've cut Vernon Adams. So they, for that trade with Calgary and then Saskatchewan, they've got absolutely nothing to show for it. There was another trade just prior to the draft. They dealt, very famously, Ryan Bombin to the Montreal Alouettes in order to move up in the draft. I know they got other things involved in the two, but the essential trade was Bombin and Hamilton's first, for Montreal's first, and I believe it was a second-round pick next year. I know there are other picks involved, but that's essentially the trade. They did that so they could select Mark Chapman, and they do not have Mark Chapman under contract yet. Darius Sirocco is a guy we haven't talked about a lot on the show, but he's been starting in Bombin's old spot and has looked decent. So it's not like the Cats are essentially feeling a ton of, like, bad vibes from trading Bombin.
Right.
But it would still be really nice to have, like, the guy in Mark Chapman who, like, the Cats were, like, quote-unquote, had to have on the roster, be on the frickin' roster. Like, I don't know, you dump, you trade a guy to get a guy and then you don't sign him. Now you cut a guy who you traded a future Hall of Famer for, even if he was only here for a matter of hours. I'm not sure I understand what this front office is trying to accomplish.
It is a bit of a head-scratcher, but, you know, I was questioning their decisions with Bombin, and I was questioning their decisions with other things too. And then, you know, we hear about Bro coming in and maybe some of those decisions make sense. And so I'm gonna trust their judgment. I mean, I know that there's nothing they can do now. Vernon Adams is gone. They talked about the trade a little bit earlier than they should have, maybe June Jones did anyways, and maybe that had something to do with them not being able to get rid of Vernon Adams. But, you know, Vernon Adams is a third string guy, and I know it was in their plans. They probably thought, hey, we might not get Manziel, so we'll bring in Adams and he'll be our second string quarterback. And I think he'd be a damn good second string quarterback. But things worked out. Manziel came in and we had no use for him. We had no use for three similar style quarterbacks on this roster, which were, you know, Manziel's getting paid decent. Mazzoli's getting paid really well. Vernon Adams wasn't getting paid a rookie contract, that's for sure. So, you know, it sucks that we didn't get anything for him, but I'm not up in arms about it.
Do you think that we're maybe a little easier on these types of things because they won this past week? I don't mean to say that you would feel differently, but if this team's 0-2, we're looking at it going, man, what would this team be like with Ryan Bomben? What would they be like with Charleston Hughes if they didn't flip him for Vernon Adams, who they cut? Like, I think the product on the field has been good that I don't necessarily like the moves that were made. I don't necessarily understand them. But I'm a fan. I'm not in the front office. They are making the moves that they think are in the best interest of this football club. And this team is one of, I think there's two teams in the league that haven't won yet. And everyone else has won at least once, with Calgary winning twice. So, you know what? Maybe we need
to. And the offensive line has looked good, right? The offensive line has looked fairly good. Like, maybe the first game was not spectacular, but this game, it came together nicely.
O-line's looking good. Not like we need another receiver. Like, that was my whole thing with the trade for Chapman to begin with. It's like, I don't think the team needs another receiver. Proven that they don't. Like, I'm sure it would be nice to have him, and I'm sure he could add to the offense. But it seems like with the talent that this team has and how they've performed in the first 2 weeks, maybe we'd be a little harsher on these moves if this was a year ago and this team had been coming off getting their asses kicked twice.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, last week I was saying that they're going to go 0-5 to start the season. So I'm an emotional person when it comes to the Tiger Cats. I really am. I'm sorry, guys.
You said that a week after saying they'd go to Alberta and come home 2-0.
I know. I'm terrible. I flip-flop a lot when it comes to the Tiger Cats. But that's just the way I am. That's just that's the way I've always been.
All right, let's move on to some CFL news. And there's really no easy way to talk about this one. Ricky Ray suffered a very serious injury in the game between the Stampeders and the Argos. I missed the game live. I was at the movie theater watching Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom on Saturday evening. But when I came home, I saw the news that Ray had been carted off the field after sustaining a neck injury. I won't say against my better judgment, but I wanted to see what happened. I saw the hit. It was very scary. And I think I speak for all fans, including yourself and pretty much every fan across the league, in wishing Ray a speedy recovery and hope that he can come back on the field sooner rather than later. But Mike, like I said, the injury looked bad. So I have to ask one simple question, and it is, do you think we've seen the last of Ricky Ray on the football field?
I kind of hope so, to be honest. I love watching Ricky Ray play, but this, you know, he's getting up there in age. At some point, it's not worth it. I think he'll have a future in football. He'll be making money in football after his playing career, one way or another. To suffer an injury like that, a neck injury, is just beyond scary. And I think for the betterment of him and the betterment for his family in the future, maybe he should hang them up.
You know what sucks about this the most is you want to see these guys go out on their own terms. You want to see these guys who have been, you know, franchise players, faces of the league, guys like Ricky Ray, guys like Anthony Calvillo. You want to see them go out on top, go out on their own terms. And watching this hit reminded me of Calvillo and how he left the game. He didn't leave on his own power. He left because he was forced to leave due to injuries. I would hate for Ricky Ray to go out the same way, but I'm kind of with you just on the human aspect of it. On the selfish aspect of wanting to watch a great player continue to play, I hope Ricky Ray comes back. But on the human aspect of, I don't want to see him risk further injury by playing because he feels like he has to or he's got something to prove. Like, this man is a surefire lock for the Hall of Fame. And I hope that he finds a way back on the field, even if just late in the year, to kind of cap it off by being able to say, I'm done, not being forced out of the game. But watching how he got hit and the whole scene of basically, what was it, 20 or so minutes of just dead silence and them carting him off the field, him going to hospital, him staying in hospital. Apparently he's going to stay there for a while. They're still doing tests and evaluating him. No, there's no, like, he's moving his extremities, so there's no worry of paralysis or anything like that. But it was just a scary scene seeing it. I can't imagine what it must have been like to watch live. And yeah, I think from the human side of me, from someone who's not that much younger than Ricky Ray, I kind of hope he walks away from the game, knowing that his legacy is secure, knowing that he'll get to go to the Hall of Fame, knowing that we will get to celebrate him when the time comes. It's just a really, really crappy way to go, though.
Yeah, I know. It really is. But four Grey Cup wins, he has nothing else to prove. So like, if he comes back healthy and he plays, and that's obviously his choice, and that's fine. But I just think that he should be, you know, he should be precautious with this one. And, you know, he's almost 40, so maybe it's time, Ricky. Maybe it's time.
So there's no good way to kind of segue out of something like that. So let's go to what might be the silliest CFL news of the week, and that is that Edmonton added Terrell Owens to their negotiation list. This came maybe a day or two after a video was posted of Owens running a 4.43 40-yard dash. T.O.'s 44 years old and has essentially been out of football for 8 years. He had a tryout with Seattle Seahawks in 2012. In 2012, he played in the Indoor Football League with the Allen Wranglers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he had a weird deal with them. They actually mentioned it during the Ticats Edmonton game. Talked about how he had a contract with them where he was like part owner, but he only played home games and didn't have to play in the playoffs. Apparently, Tony Washington, our left tackle, our extraordinary left tackle, was a teammate of Owens in this league and said that Owens was a great teammate and, you know, said all the right things.
Except for not playing in playoff
games. Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. It's weird. Not playing on the road, not playing in the playoffs. It's strange, but I guess they wanted him for the name value, right? So he played in that. That's kind of the last football he played. I know he's playing some flag football thing that the NFL is doing or something like that. You on the surface of this, you go, this is insane. This is a publicity stunt and blah, blah, blah. Brock Sunderland's not that kind of GM, so I got a question for you, Mike. Do you think this is going to happen, and what are the odds that Terrell Owens is going to suit up in the Canadian Football League at 44 years of age?
Well, it sounds like the Eskimos have some serious interest in the player, but I don't see this being a good thing for the league, for Terrell, for the Eskimos. You know, the guy's 44. He hasn't been playing football at a high level for 8 years. I mean, if he comes in and he lights the league on fire, I mean, what's that gonna make people go, oh, the CFL's, you know, whatever they already think of it, but even worse. And if he comes in and he sucks, then it'll be like, oh, the CFL's just a publicity stunt. They just want attention. This is just a lose-lose situation, in my opinion. Unless he comes in and really does well for the Eskimos, and then that would be good for the Eskimos, obviously, but overall, for a league, from a league perspective, I don't see how this is a win at all.
All right, that's fair. I will talk selfishly on this one. And Hamilton-Edmonton playing Hamilton in late August. If T.O.'s going to sign, I hope it's before then, because I would not mind being able to say, hey, I saw Terrell Owens play live football. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I agree with everything you said. I don't think I can add anything to that, so that's why I'm taking this topic like this. I would like to see, like, look, Johnny Manziel, I know Johnny Manziel, everyone wants to talk about him. I got to watch him play in a live football game, and if you'd have told me that 6 years ago when he was winning the Heisman Trophy at Texas A&M, I would have said, yeah, maybe I'll go to an NFL game and see it, but I doubt that. I don't really cross the border all that much to go watch sports. In fact, I probably haven't done it in, holy smokes, I couldn't tell you how long. So he comes up here, I'll get to see him play. It's kind of a cool thing, but yeah, I don't know how, like, I can't remember who said it. I don't know if it was Dwayne Ford or if it was Milt Stegall saying, yeah, he was running real fast, but he wasn't getting hit. What's it going to be like when a 44-year-old gets hit? I don't know. He's obviously in phenomenal shape, but that was his thing even when he was a player. I don't know. I think maybe this is one of those things where maybe it's this stone is best left unturned, if you will.
Yeah, I think this story might just disappear into the night.
Yeah. Okay, next up. This kind of came by surprise. Our boy, Justin Dunk, broke the news earlier on Monday that the CFL and CFLPA have agreed to eliminate minicamps. They were first implemented in 2010. I always enjoyed it because it gave us some football news to talk about, not just on the podcast, not just on social media, but it gave us sort of in that post-free agency, pre-draft time frame, we got to see a little bit of actual football stuff. You could go to them. Hamilton always holds theirs in Hamilton if you want to go. It kind of gets you that, like, it whets your appetite for the start of football season. But now it looks like they're going to be going away, and this was the last year for them. So what do you think, Mike? Do you think it's a good or a bad thing for the game to get rid of minicamps?
Well, I think it's a bad thing. The training camps are already short enough, and These are voluntary mini camps. Like, I don't understand why they're eliminating them. If you didn't want to go, you didn't have to. So, yeah, I don't like it at all. I think that it's going to hurt the product a little bit. You know, it might not be overly obvious, but the more time you can have together as a team, the better. So I thumbs down to this one, bud.
Yeah, I don't know what the player safety issue is. Like, I know Randy Ambrosi, since he's been commissioner, player safety has been his big thing. No contact, no pads at practice is a thing now. The extra bye week that every team gets is in order to stop these, like, you're playing 2 games in 6 days type deal, or, you know, 2 games in 5 to 3 games in 11 days. Like, it has been a lot of, at least on the surface, player safety stuff, and maybe that's kind of why they're looking at this. But I don't understand why mini camps, which weren't padded, no pads at mini camps, and it was 3 days, and like you said, it was voluntary. I'm not sure why these things would get the axe, because, well, I don't think it necessarily creates the early part of the season games that much better, but I think we've seen some pretty entertaining and a lot less sloppy play early in this season, at least, you know, Montreal aside, but that has nothing to do. They could have an entire off season of mini camps every week, and I don't think it would make a difference for them. But I feel like we've seen a lot more fluidity in the games, in the offenses. I just don't see the reasons to get rid of it. If, like, I know there was years where they didn't happen, and that's fine. But I feel like in the current climate of professional sports, where being an athlete is not, like, I hate when I see either CFL fans or CFL detractors say, oh, I'd love to get paid $53,000. Like, when James Wilder Jr. was like, I don't want to play for $50,000 a year. And people are like, I'd love to get paid $50,000 to work 6 months. And it's like, you don't understand what it takes to be a professional athlete. It's not a six-month gig. This is not 1962, where guys would go to the factory and work there and then play football after their shift was over. Like, to be a pro athlete now is a full-time job. And I feel like these mini camps allowed teams to implement their systems. June Jones talked about it, to make it about the Ticats, about how mini camps allowed him to sort of start installing packages and installing plays on his complete playbook that he wasn't able to do the year before because he came in halfway through the season. And now he can kind of start installing things here that guys can get reads on and kind of understand. So it gives him kind of a jump start on training camp. It just seems kind of pointless to not have them. Like, I don't think they were a huge deal, but I don't see the reason to get rid of them.
Yeah, it certainly didn't hurt the play on the field or anything like that. I don't know who wants to get rid of them, if it's the PA or the CFL, but yeah, it's a bit of a head scratcher.
Yeah, maybe we'll find out more. Maybe this is a give and take for the upcoming CBA. Who knows? But I'm sure we'll find out more as the situation progresses. Last kind of CFL news item is not really a CFL news item, but it is a topic, Mike, that I wanted to discuss with you. And I think we have to talk about the quarterback situation in Regina. That game between the Red Blacks and the Riders saw Zach Caleros get the absolute crap kicked out of him by Ottawa. And he even exited the game with a concussion. And I put this out on Twitter, and I know you and I have both on mic and off mic kind of talked about this before, and I openly wondered if maybe the Riders should consider starting Brandon Bridge instead of Zach Caleros. And we've had, like I said, we've had discussion before, and this is not because I think Bridge is a better quarterback. I don't. I speak for both of us rather unequivocally in saying that we both believe that Zach Caleros is by far the more talented quarterback. He's the best quarterback the Riders have in their roster. But that offensive line is awful in Saskatchewan. And I think that having someone like Bridge, who is more mobile, might be a better option. Like, Caleros looked good in week one, but he got time to make plays. And then that line really regressed in week two, and he was under siege. And we saw the results, man. He's left the game in the second week of the season. And, man, that was rough to see. And I've been batting this idea around for a couple of days, and we have a podcast, and that's talking CFL, and that's why I want to kind of get you in here. And I just basically, the question is, Mike, like, in the interest of not getting Zach Caleros killed, and based on this being the old line the Riders are probably going to continue to trot out, would it be smarter to start Brandon Bridge?
It might be, just because of the mobility factor. We all know that Zach isn't exactly the Zach of 3-4 years ago, mobility wise, but yeah, I mean, if he doesn't have time back there, if he's going to get his head knocked off like he did in Hamilton, I mean, this has got to be hugely frustrating for Zach, because you know the talent's there, but the guy has to have time back there. He just has to have time in the pocket to make his decisions, and maybe they would be better off with Brandon Bridge running around like an idiot, but we'll wait and see. Maybe they shouldn't have released an all-star offensive lineman, right, and a veteran offensive lineman, Peter Dayakowski. They have problems there on that offensive line, and if Zach's in there, it's not going to improve, because that's Zach's thing. He likes to take his time back there, and, well, not take his time, but goes through his reads at least, and if he doesn't have the time to do that, then he's not going to be very successful. So if Brandon Bridge can get outside of the pocket, move the pocket around, maybe it's a better decision to have him in there.
I hate saying this, because even though he's not our quarterback anymore, Zach Caleros is a fun quarterback to watch. Like, we will always look back on 2014 and 2015 with warm memories because of how he played. But does he not give off the vibe? And maybe this is through no fault of his own. This is through bad luck and terrible offensive line play. Is he not starting to kind of remind you of latter career Matt Dunnigan or a Buck Pierce, where he's just getting killed out there and his career is going to be a lot shorter than it probably should be?
It is leaning towards that a little bit. Obviously, we both hope that's not the case. We both hope that Zach has a very lengthy, successful career. But, you know, if he's not getting protected, then I don't see how he lasts any longer than, you know, Dunnigan lasted a while. He had a really long career, but Buck Pierce should have been a starting quarterback for several more years. And I really hope that's not the case with Zach.
All right, Mike, let's move on to everyone's favorite segment, Bozo Slapdicks and Chodes. We don't have any slapdicks this week. No one was that silly, but we do have a Bozo and we do have a Chode. So, Mike, why don't you kick it off with this week's Bozo?
Well, it's kind of a repeating thing on this podcast, but my Bozo goes
Should we just rename this the Rod Peterson Award?
I guess we might as well at this point, but my Bozo's got to go to Roddy, not in any hateful way, you know. It's just, I just picture, you know, he was sneaking around Ottawa's practice, and I don't know, he was asked to leave, and he was hiding behind a cardboard cutout of himself or something wacky, but I can just picture him, you know, creeping around in his hat and his sunglasses and trying to look inconspicuous, but yeah, you know, a lighthearted Bozo goes out to Rod Peterson this week.
Yeah, just silly stuff. And then he's defending himself on Twitter. And then someone from, I believe, the Red Blacks organization was like, that's not what happened, man. Like, yeah, this is what happened. Like, just a really silly sort of scenario. Peterson is he's a longtime broadcaster.
He's a silly man.
But he was in a place he wasn't supposed to be. And as someone who's called number of games in Ottawa, as someone who has been around the league more than once, like, this is, he's not new to the game, knows where he's supposed to be. Like, it just, it seems like this is purposeful, almost like he's trying to drum up this sort of controversy. So yeah, lighthearted Bozo for sure. And the Chode is a bit lighthearted as well, but it's maybe a little more serious. TSN did this segment, I believe it was pregame, I think it was after you had texted me about Kate and Hank. And I was just like, well, I guess I'm watching the panel. I don't know why I do it to myself. But they did, or maybe it was Friday. I don't remember when it was. But they did this whole segment on streaking. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of weird because, as you know, when you watch a game, you don't really see the streakers. They tend to shy away from them. Maybe they'll mention that some idiot's on the field. I think sometimes they even call him a bozo. So maybe this should have been the bozo. But it is what it is. Talk up, yeah, and like, they don't like to show it. They barely mention it. And then you have TSN doing this whole, like, it's like a 3-minute long segment. And near the end of it, they go, well, no network wants to expose the streakers or give them a platform. And they say this as they're doing a segment on streaking, giving it a platform, giving it sort of attention and showing a bunch of, they talked at one point about, this guy is the world's most famous streaker, and he's gone to the Super Bowl, and he's made hundreds of thousands of dollars for websites, and he's gotten sponsorship deals to run on the field at these major sporting events. And it's like, you're glamorizing this in the same segment that you said you shouldn't glamorize it. Like, yeah, that is Chode behavior, Mike.
It quite Chodey.
quite Chodey.
Yeah. quite hypocritical as well. Just a weird segment. They're going for that younger demographic, and the young people think it's funny when – well, I think it's funny sometimes too, but the younger crowd thinks it's funny when there's streakers on the field. So, you know, they got Kate. They got that other girl. They got new members. So they're trying to go younger, and this was part of it, I think. But it was just – it was stupid. It was a stupid segment for them to not show streakers during the game, but then show the actual footage of what happened in the game in BC. It's a dumb move by them, in my opinion.
All right, Mike, let's close things out by previewing this week's upcoming game. After 2 weeks, our Tiger Cats finally come home to the friendly confines of Tim Hortons Field, where they will host the surprising, in a way, Winnipeg Blue Bombers on Friday night. As we did last week, and as we will each week going forward, you are going to give two reasons why you think the Ticats will lose, and I am going to give two reasons why I think the Ticats will win. Sometimes we may switch this up. But Mike,
we'll switch it up when they lose next. How about that? Because okay, we're riding this wave of me telling our listeners why they're going to lose, and obviously they're going to win. The opposite of what I say.
All right. So you're going to put on the pessimism cap and tell us why the Ticats are going to not be victorious at home against Winnipeg on Friday. So, Mike, give us your first reason why you think the Ticats will lose on Friday night.
Well, it's pretty simple. Strebler mania.
Running wild, brother.
Yes, the rookie quarterback has performed really well in his first two games. So, you know, that's one of the reasons. He's going to keep it going against the Ticats, and he's going to put up some big numbers and get that W for Winnipeg.
Okay, so that's funny, because my top reason for why I think the Ticats will win is Chris Strebler. And I'm not going to take anything away from how he's played. He looked really good in those first two starts. Currently leads the CFL in touchdown passes. But they come with an asterisk. One game came against Edmonton, whose defense was missing like half of their regular starters. And the other game came against Montreal, which goes without saying as to why that was one where they were probably going to score a lot of points. The Ticats, who I think have played well, albeit maybe not great on defense, I think that's going to be his first real true test in the CFL. And I think this game it's also on the road in a tough environment in front of a rowdy crowd that I think will be really hyped up after Hamilton got that win on Friday. So I think this will be kind of the toughest test of Chris Strebler's young career. And I think the Ticats are up for the task of stopping him and that Winnipeg offense.
Yes, very good. Very good. Now, my second reason is the defense is just better than the Eskimos, Winnipeg's defense. The Ticats played the Eskimos last week, really tore them apart, but I think that they're going to have a tougher task this week in Edmonton, or in Winnipeg.
I mean, if this game is in Edmonton, hey, if Winnipeg and Hamilton play in Edmonton again, you know what that means. That's a great cup, buddy.
Oh, yes.
Think about
that
it.
That is great. That's great cup.
So I'll be happy to see this matchup in Edmonton in November, sitting in those cold-ass seats at Commonwealth, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. I got to agree with you that I do think Winnipeg's defense is really good. There's a lot of talent on that team, and it's going to be tough to crack. But one guy who's been able to crack pretty much every defense he's played against, and that's Jeremiah Mazzoli. And no one but Jeremiah Mazzoli can stop Jeremiah Mazzoli. This dude is playing lights-out football right now. He's got a confidence at the quarterback position I don't think we've seen since that early 2015 run with Caleros and them just running roughshod over everyone. He's been poised. He's been even keeled. He's just been playing great football pretty much every week since he took over on Labor Day last year. And I know that defense is good, but Jeremiah Mazzoli just outdueled Mike Riley, and we watched him perform better than Bo Levi Mitchell. And I don't see any reason why Jeremiah Mazzoli can't continue to have success against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Their good defense, be damned.
Well, let's all hope that Josh is correct.
I think everyone listening to this, or at least most people listening to this, maybe not Joe from the Rouge, White, and Blue podcast, who is a Bombers fan. He's probably not happy to hear why I think they'll win, but I think most people who listen to us will want me to be correct and you to be wrong. So that was the show for this week. You can find us on all the wonderful podcast apps out there, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and of course, 3downnation.com. And social media, we're always on there. I think people should have taken notice. We are live tweeting stuff from games. the way it's going to be handled going forward, to give a peek behind the curtain. Mike, you're going to basically do road games, where the Ticats are at home. Mm-hmm. See, I'm already messing up. I'm going to try to do the road games. It was tough for me on Friday because that game was so late. Then I was like, there's a lightning delay, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna be asleep before this game starts. Luckily it was kind of a quick one, so it wasn't so bad. And then when they started playing well, like I was up until like 3-4 a.m. Hamilton time after
just
that game,
riding the buzz
kind of like I started writing my article for Three Down, and it's like usually on a late game I'll jot down some ideas, save the file, go to bed. But I was just like, man, I'm on a high off that win, so I just kept going. And I was like, I got to go to sleep because I had to be up the next morning at 6:30 because that was Sunday morning. But anyway, you know what? Forget what I just said. I'm a complete idiot. Anyway, that's what we're doing social media-wise. But you can always hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at PodsQBB. And, of course, we have our own personal accounts where you can find us with your questions and comments. Mike, let them know where they can find you, pal.
Mike_TagCats.
And I am JoshSmith_82. And of course, the comment section is always open at Three Down Nation, and you can hit us up there as well. And, you know, don't forget, I think in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be putting out some new t-shirts, got some new ideas. Mike, I will send you some new designs over the next week or two that I've kind of thrown together myself. I think some of them are pretty snazzy. And you can find those at some point, along with all our other great merchandise, over at shop.spreadshirt.ch/podskiwiwi. Mike, that was episode number 113 of Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CFPod Network on Twitter.